The answer to this question is an emphatic no, okay? And I'm not hedging my bet in any way, shape, or form. I was the person that came on this show in January of 2017 and defended the honor of one Kawhi Leonard when people were saying, questioning whether he got misdiagnosed or not. He went on to play 9 games that year, and as Max mentioned, ultimately got traded. Kevin Durant in this situation, the reason why he should not have played, there are multiple answers to this question. One, I blame the overall culture of sports. There's a herd mentality that takes place when you're a professional athlete. And all of a sudden, when you start to make a lot of money, people think that you're immune to everything that comes with being a human being. And so if the Golden State Warriors were up 3-1, KD would not have returned. But since they were down 3-1, he was forced to return based on all of the chatter that we knew was going to take place. He's soft. He really didn't want it. He wasn't committed to the team. Oh, and he was leaving anyway. And he knows that. That's why he decided he wanted to come back. There's a group called State Property that I love growing up. And one of the things, I think it was Oskino and Spark said, people will bring flowers to your funeral, but don't bring you soup when you're sick. That's what I'm seeing for KD right now. Everybody fake acting like they caring about KD's best interest when they don't. It's phony to me. I just said Friday night on NBA Countdown that KD's workout did not go well for nobody involved. And then when KD got cleared to play, people felt like they wanted to assassinate my character. Oh, you didn't know what you was talking about. KD's cleared to play. Just because he's out there warming up and doing dunks, that's adrenaline. It's a rush. He's a professional athlete. That's just like people having coffee in the morning or espresso or sugar. It's going to be a rush. And then there's a crash. And Stephen A., you can't be out there at 75% going against Kawhi Leonard in the NBA Finals. This ain't June. You said that he can't take somebody off the dribble unnecessarily. That's his game. If he can't do that, he shouldn't play.
I'll respond to it.
He should not play. And so now all of a sudden, KD has to deal with an Achilles injury. I think that's going to keep him out 12 months if we hear that it's torn. We got our pound of flesh as media, as fans, as people who watch this league faithfully. We wanted to see KD give himself to us. We thought it was weak that he wouldn't join the Golden State Warriors. I didn't like that he joined the Golden State Warriors because when you go to the park, you want the two best players to pick teams, right, not join teams. Right. But since he joined the Golden State Warriors, now it was a quest for him to prove that he could be something bigger than just a back-to-back reigning finals MVP. That's why all year we have said that KD was leaving. Why? Because he was on the thirst for something that Golden State couldn't give him. We created that narrative. He would never be the dude in Golden State. That's always going to be Steph Curry's team. So therefore, he goes there, wins championships, but he got to leave to still validate himself. So now, congratulations, world. You got your pound of flesh.
All right. So this episode, I think, will be a bit more somber than our past two. I think we both agree that we want to focus on the Kevin Durant injury, the tragic Kevin Durant injury that happened in game 5, last game of the NBA Finals. And the reason why we want to focus on that is I think that's the main story coming away from that game. I think everything that happened, you know, leading up to that game and the aftermath all centers around that moment, that really tragic moment. We, you know, the news coming out today that Kevin Durant had successful surgery to repair a ruptured Achilles. You know, we wish him a speedy recovery, but I think really we need to talk about that event, everything leading up to it, and the aftermath. I think it impacted the game significantly as well. But I think we really want to focus on that whole storyline rather than talking about the game. And honestly, if I'm being totally honest, you know, if Toronto is going to win the championship this year, I'm glad it didn't happen in that game with that injury. I think let's start there. The KD injury. I know, David, you're a big Kevin Durant fan. You know, I am as well, but I think you're one of the biggest Kevin Durant fans I know.
Yeah.
So why don't you start us off? Tell me, you know, your reaction to that injury.
Yeah. Well, first, let me just say, kind of reiterate what you just said, that I think it's hard to come away from that game. For you and I, as much as we started this and wanted to do a Raptors podcast because of how special we thought the Raptors were this year, as much as that was maybe our motivation or what got us to do this in the first place, both you and I have been NBA fans, period. And we've both had lengthy conversations about playoff series and past finals that I think you and I even went to watch games in Toronto together when it was Golden State and Cleveland in the finals, right? Like, so we are basketball fans in addition to being Raptors fans. And this, for anybody who's a fan of the league, who's a fan of the NBA, the history around the game, who likes to dive into big conversations about who the greatest player ever is, who the greatest player is right now, anybody who approaches the game with that kind of larger perspective about the sport, this was a, like you said, a tragic night. This was a disastrous night. You asked me kind of how I processed it as a kind of especially big Kevin Durant fan. I was sick to my stomach when that injury happened.
Yeah.
And I think I immediately started kind of reaching out to other friends and other fans of the Raptors, just being like, this is a disaster. This is the worst possible way for this to have played out. I think you asked me point blank as I was kind of relaying that message, would I just rather have Kevin Durant not have played at all? And yes, the answer is definitely yes. I felt like he was being rushed back, and that's what I think we should talk a little bit about, especially since both you and I kind of come at basketball and sports, maybe not always through a political perspective, but I think both you and I process this in a way that has a little bit more to do with, I don't know, attitudes and ideology and kind of how this stuff fits together. And we had just done an episode talking about how great sports can be for bringing folks together and making people think about things a little different and having a sense of community, and how that can actually be kind of a springboard into larger and deeper conversations about justice and equality and all these other things. We had this big kind of love affair episode about sports. And I don't know if you want to mention it right now, but this unfortunate reaction that we saw play out from Raptors fans when this injury happened, and just in that split second, I mean, I don't want to exaggerate what it was. It was a split second reaction, but you did see some people cheering as Kevin Durant went down, and people kind of realized that he was probably out for the rest of the game and probably out for the rest of the series. And there was this split second reaction of excitement maybe at how this created more of an opportunity for us to win this title. It was sickening to see that, obviously. And I don't know how to quite walk that right line of not exaggerating it or turning it into, because certainly the majority of fans, as they appreciated what had happened, were supportive of Kevin Durant. And so I'm not quite sure how to walk that line. But I just wanted to say, that was certainly a rebuttal to our sense of like how sports brings people together. That was the bad side of competition, however brief it was.
Yeah. So I think that was really good, I think, summary of the topics we're going to cover in this episode. So I think I want us to start with first discussing the story surrounding the injury, you know, everything leading up to it, and then the aftermath.
Sure.
Yeah, you talked about how, I mean, you love watching Kevin Durant play, you know, and I, like, myself included, like, Kevin Durant may be one of the most fun, if not the most fun, basketball player to watch play the game. You know, his raw skill, his smoothness on the court. Like, I was a huge Kevin Durant fan in his OKC days. I loved watching him play. I mentioned this in a few episodes ago that OKC was kind of my team in the West, that I would cheer for that team. And it was largely because Kevin Durant was just so awesome to watch. And, you know, that brings me to, I think, the backlash against Kevin Durant and the vilification of Kevin Durant when he made that decision to go to Golden State. I think that's where we should start in this discussion, because I think we should go all the way back to that moment in terms of what were the sequence of events that led to this happening. And so starting there, you know, I'm definitely more guilty than you. You've been a Kevin Durant stan, you know, through thick and thin, but I definitely was one of the fans that thought it was a soft move that he joined the 73-9 Golden State Warriors and creating basically a completely unfair team due to, you know, that aberration in the cap situation where it spiked that year, which allowed that something so crazy like that to happen. And, you know, myself and a large portion of the basketball community, you know, hated him for that decision. And, you know, you saw it year after year, you know, when they would dominate the league, easily just walk through the playoffs into a championship, almost like it was nothing, you know, just easily swiping away those LeBron-led Cavs teams. And, you know, despite, you know, him winning finals MVP, two championships, yeah, two finals MVPs, I should say, and two championships. Each championship, it clearly seemed to him like it felt more and more hollow, that despite, you know, getting all these accolades from, you know, real tangible accomplishments, he was getting, you know, arguably less and less adoration from the basketball community. And, you know, Kevin Durant, from everything that we know about him, you know, he's a sensitive guy, and he definitely cares about that stuff and cares about legacy and his image. And so, you know, you understand where his frustrations were coming from and why, you know, all the rumors this year, it sounded like he was looking to get out of that situation because he basically determined that I'm not going to reach the level of legacy I want to achieve in this current situation.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about maybe the Raptors have a bit of an asterisk on any potential title here if we are able to finish this off, and that asterisk would come from KD not playing. KD has experienced, ever since he went to Golden State, that feeling of other people putting an asterisk on your achievement because he did join this historic team, this team that had already beat him and won a title. And so that, I'm just imagining some people, even though I completely agree with you that that's really where the story starts. I can imagine some people listening to this and feeling like that's a bit far afield to go back to that decision and that development. But the point that I think you're making, I think it's a really, really good point and an important point. And actually, I don't know if you saw it, but Kevin Durant's mother has kind of waded into the situation here recently. I think the point you're making is right on, that if you're really to understand why a player will come back and put himself at risk in this way, you have to take stock of like the larger social context the larger pressures from fans that have been going on and that reach back. I mean, his whole career in some ways has been defined by this dramatic shift or change in the way that fans, because KD was the guy who was doing it right, right? Like whenever LeBron made the decision, famously, to go to Miami, KD kind of quietly announced that he had extended his time with OKC. I think he like just put a tweet out there or something that was like, yeah, I've signed back on with OKC. And so his reputation was built up around this idea, this narrative that he was like the guy doing it the right way, you know, staying in the small market, being loyal. And all of that stuff is really, really problematic right from the get-go. So he was he's been up against that going all the way to, because in reality, he stayed with OKC for his own reasons, not because he cared about these larger narratives. And he went to Golden State for his own reasons, right? I mean, and he did that after multiple big three teams had been made, multiple kind of shortcuts to a championship had already played out. I mean, it was hardly unprecedented. It did make a super team. I think a lot of people, you know, we talk about healthy competition, healthy fandom versus bad competition or unhealthy fandom. I think it's reasonable to critique his decision from a basketball perspective, but when it gets personal, and it did get personal, where he's, you know, this attitude of him being soft or him being, you know, not like a front runner or a bandwagon jumper. I heard that today, even, you know, when we did talk at work with some of my coworkers about what it was, what this meant for the league. And there was still this kind of thread of like, well, you know, he's always been this bandwagon guy anyway. So how broken up should we really be? And I think that crosses a line for me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, my main critique definitely was from a basketball perspective in that, and I mentioned this in a previous episode, that the reason why I felt like I couldn't cheer for KD as much now as it did in his OKC days is that it felt like he, with this current super team, he had no, you know, he had no match. There was no match to challenge him, you know. There was no other side that could really, you know, present a real challenge to him that if he should surmount, it would really like cement his legacy in the league. And that was, I think, the mistake from my perspective, the mistake in joining that that situation. Obviously, he had, you know, all the right to make that decision, and that does not diminish his character in any way. My only point then was that, and I still believe this, that in order to cement his legacy, he needed to really overcome something really unsurmountable, kind of similar to the LeBron situation. I think, you know, people really weren't discussing LeBron in the same, you know, light as an MJ, for example, until he won that title with Cleveland, beating that Golden State team. I think that huge obstacle that was presented to him and him overcoming that really cemented his legacy. And I think KD needed to do something similar to really reach that point. And I think that was his plan after this year.
Yeah.
And I think he understood that. And, you know, to bring it back to kind of the flack that he got, you know, throughout his tenure at Golden State, you know, that flack, like you mentioned, often got personal. And it often became just like ridiculously unfounded and sort of stretching towards, you know, criticizing his game almost. You know, there was this whole narrative that is Golden State better without Kevin Durant, which felt a lot like just stemming from the hate he was getting for joining that team, not so much like his quality of play. Because anyone who watches basketball seriously understands that Kevin Durant is clearly, you know, one of the best players in the league and one of the best players to ever play the game. And so all that, you know, heat that he was getting, and then it felt like this year, you know, with all the rumors of him going to the Knicks, it felt like almost that he was also losing the Golden State fans, you know, the fans that he felt like he could count on. He must have, you know, been getting a lot of flack from there as well. And so all of that leading up to this moment where the Golden State Warriors, without Kevin Durant, but with pretty much the entire rest of the roster, going down 3-1 to our beautiful Toronto Raptors, presented essentially what probably felt to him as the perfect narrative for him to enter this this series.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, I think a few episodes ago, that, you know, for a Kevin Durant fan, the best case scenario is the Golden State Warriors losing this series without Kevin Durant to really validate that they needed him and to just put to bed this whole story that is Golden State better than without Kevin Durant, which was just ridiculous. And so that gets us to this moment, game five, where down 3-1, all sorts of, you know, clouds surrounding this Kevin Durant injury, very unclear what the situation is there. And I want us to talk about that, but you understand from his perspective, what would motivate him to potentially put himself at risk and enter this game.
Yeah, definitely. I think anybody that's kind of like taking a shortcut to like, well, there's no blame here, or there's no responsibility besides for Kevin Durant himself. You know, he's a grown man. He can make a decision about whether or not he wants to play. Anybody kind of reaching for that really quickly is just totally disregarding everything that you just said, which I think is a mistake. Everything you just laid out there, all was a source of pressure on him, and it has to be taken into account when you consider kind of what just went down. This is crazy. Like,
yeah,
basically our version, this era's best player right now, at least. And I know we both, you and I, are all in on Kawhi, of course, as Raptors fans, and we've made the case that Kawhi is actually the best player, but Kevin Durant probably has the best resume, at least for this moment, to say he's the best player of all time. And still that, or not all time, sorry, the best player currently going, and one of the best players of all time. Even with all of that, this guy still felt so much pressure. And so you have to kind of question the fact that he was maybe allowed to make this decision rather than the medical staff intervening. And maybe we can get into that. But I did just want to point out first that Yeah, and I think Kevin Durant's been up against this narrative that you described that somehow Golden State might even be better without Kevin Durant. And I just think that not only is that so ridiculous, but you actually see the role that the media played in pushing this narrative, because the media repeatedly, even people that I really respect and will, you know, continue to value, but even those people were talking about this record of Golden State without Kevin Durant, something like 31-1 or whatever the number was. But more to the point, their record in a finals, in the NBA finals, without right. Kevin Durant versus with Kevin Durant, right. clearly indicated that Kevin Durant was essential to their ascent to being like an unbeatable team, right? And yep. and so even the media was kind of embracing statistics that push this argument. And this is what, you know, this is what you do, right? When you're in the business of takes and you're in the content mill and you're just trying to get headlines that create those clicks, you find the argument or you find the numbers that support what you want to put out there and create the conversation or drive the story. But I think it was funny. As soon as Kevin Durant came back, I saw that stat that Kevin Durant has made a huge impact on their finals play, right? Because, of course, the first year they were there without Kevin Durant in, what was that, 2015? In the first finals when they didn't have Kevin Durant yet?
I think when they didn't, yeah, maybe it was 2015. I can't remember.
Something like that. Anyway, yeah. That first year they did win the title, but it took them six games. And then the next year they came back and they lost in seven.
Right.
So that should have been the record we were talking about going into the finals. Is like, this is what Golden State's up against here. They are a team with a losing record or an even record, more or less, without Kevin Durant. But instead, the media jumped on this number that really painted this lopsided picture that, like, clearly Golden State is incredible without him. And I can't imagine what it would be like to be a player that's already kind of miscalculated in terms of his own legacy, and already created this like army of haters, and is somebody who has clearly been very online. He's a very millennial. He's a very millennial franchise player. He's the guy who's online, and he's got the burner accounts, and he's very sensitive to the discussion, the discourse, so to speak. And that guy was looking at this and just feeling like everyone's saying, like, if you don't come back, well. And then there's been sort of the story too that kind of emerged that, like, some of the Golden State players, some of the Warrior players kind of wondering aloud, maybe, that, you know, he should be here. Where's Kevin Durant? We've been expecting him to come back. And I actually don't blame the players so much for that, because I think the whole organization ultimately is accountable for pushing this idea that the injury situation was a question mark and it was game to game, instead of just coming out and saying, like, no, his injury is really serious and him coming back is a high risk play for his future health. And we're not bringing him back at the very least until this date, you know?
Yeah.
They never just came out and said that. It was like, maybe he'll come back in game three. Maybe, actually, as early as game two, there was talk about, like, maybe he'll... I think their initial statement before the finals started was that he was ruled out for game one, but he'd be traveling with the team. We'll see what happens with game two. Yep. And it was like, okay, well, he's probably going to play game three. If not game three, definitely game four. And this was the constant stream of updates. And it's just like... That had to be an unbearable situation for Kevin Durant.
Yep. Yeah, agreed. And yeah, so you brought up two, I think, key points that I want to touch upon. The first one you brought up, you know, we talked first about the fans and the pressure that they put on him. But then also you brought up a good point about the media and their driving this narrative, and almost like the media has a tendency, and this is not just in sports, but in general, to amplify the most reactionary takes, to amplify, you know, the most, controversial voices. Right. And so that's essentially what we saw, throughout this Kevin Durant tenure in Golden State. You know, they would amplify the narrative that, you know, potentially Golden State is better without him, or that, you know, he, you know, cheaped out by joining the super team, that he's not a winner, et cetera, et cetera. And you would hear it, and it would be subtle sometimes, but sometimes it would be just straight out. They would flash this number of 31-1 when Steph plays and KD doesn't. And obviously, like you mentioned, that's like clear misinformation, because it misses the point of the record. Like, that's a regular season record, you know. But you have to compare that against what matters, which is their playoff record with and without him. So yeah, I think the media definitely, you know, as with the fans collectively put a lot of pressure and on him, and you know, him being an extremely online personality, you know, it makes him relatable, in my opinion. Like millennials and you know, future generations, we're all, a lot of us are very extremely online, would have been affected very similarly, if not even worse, by all the stories that were coming out if it, we were in his shoes, right?
Yeah, I think he can be criticized on some of that stuff, but at the end of the day, like you said, it's super relatable. And I just feel like I feel like people in the media, and maybe we could talk about this. There has been this rush to consensus since this happened on Monday night that no one's to blame. And he's not only is he a grown man, but they follow the proper procedures, blah, 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 blah. There's no one to blame. That's kind of been the consensus coming out of this. And there's been sympathy for really everyone to go around. But I just think that that's ridiculous. Like
the media
should feel culpability for itself. There should be a lot of people in the media who are ashamed of themselves right now and who are doing a mea culpa and apologizing and just expressing that, you know, they had no idea what the fuck they were talking about, and they forced this guy, or they created a situation at least that made this guy feel like he had to come back and prove something instead of taking care of himself and his family and his career and everything else. So there's that. But then on the other side of that, I have to draw this comparison too. It reminds me of a lot of these like access journalists in politics, right? Like these people who cover the White House or they cover some politician or whatever. And they have to maintain this relationship with the more powerful person that they're covering in order to create stories down the line. So it's an access game, and they trade in access. And so the story can never be too critical, can never be too truth-telling, because at the end of the day, they need to maintain the relationship and maintain access. And I feel like a lot of sports journalism is the same. And you see guys who are normally quite critical and thoughtful, they're just immediately, well, there's nothing to see here, you know, like they're jumping to that right away. Nothing to see here, guys. Like, he's an adult, he made a decision to play, blah, you know. I said blah blah too many times, so I'm not gonna say it again. But there's been this real rush to just like let everyone off the hook here. And I'll throw it back to you with this. And I hesitate to even say it because obviously I have no idea what this guy's really like. But the media seemed to really rally to Bob Myers in his press conference. And he kind of broke down and had kind of an emotional display following this game five and this injury to Kevin Durant. And everyone seemed to kind of characterize it as like, wow, like, God, even this former agent and general manager is like really broken up about this. But I just, and like I said, I don't want to overthink it, and like, because I don't know this guy, I really don't. I don't know what the relationship is like between him and Kevin Durant. But I watched that and I came away feeling very cold. Like I came away from a feeling like this was a more of a stunt, maybe.
Yeah.
Which as I say, like, could be very unfair. But but I'm just being honest. When I watched it, I was like cringing a bit. I was like, this doesn't seem like an honest display.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I agree that it is absolutely ridiculous to say that everyone is blameless in this situation. And I think, you know, you hear that being said mostly from, you know, people in the media, and obviously, you know, they have incentive to protect each other because they don't want to throw each other under the bus. Yeah. And like you said, they have to maintain these relationships. So they're obviously not going to, you know, try to say that, you know, Golden State, they're not going to throw out speculation that Golden State, you know, did something wrong in their handling of the situation. But you and I, we are not part of this media circle. We can say straight up that I think that there is a lot of blame to go around. And, you know, Kevin Durant being susceptible to this pressure, sure, he's his own man, and he ultimately, you know, had a part in this decision. But ultimately, as we talked about, you know, any person in his situation would feel the kind of pressure he did. And then from the media and the fans, and then, you know, I really want to talk about this, you know, the Golden State, how they handled his injury, to me, at least from my perspective and everything I heard, I find it egregious. And I think they are not being held accountable enough. And everything that I've been shaking my head listening to a lot of these pods and you know, on ESPN, just no one is talking about this. And I think there are a handful.
Mostly former players,
exactly.
I'm pushing back a little bit.
And I'm hoping, you know, somewhere in this pod, we can clip this video, the audio from this video that I sent you earlier today by Jalen Rose, who was just giving all the media, taking the entire media to task with how they narrated this whole Kevin Durant situation and how they 100% have culpability here. In pressuring him to kind of play and everything that transpired and kind of what we talked about earlier. And from Golden State's perspective, you know, Achilles injuries, I guess, you know, they can happen out of the blue, but when a player has a calf injury, I Steve Kerr came out today and said that had we known that this was within the realm of possibilities, we wouldn't have played him. You know, everything that I've been hearing about from, you know, potentially medical experts to former players who either have dealt with injuries in their calf or know other players who have dealt with similar injuries, all of these players, whether it's Charles Barkley, whether it's Kendrick Perkins, Jalen Rose, you know, throughout the finals, they were saying that Kevin Durant shouldn't and won't come back in this series because a calf injury is something that you don't play or mess around with. And you know, everyone else outside of these players, you know, from the media to the Golden State team, were saying, just floating this, oh, he might play, you know, he's working towards coming back, that he will probably play as early as game two in this series. And then just how the messaging that came out from the Golden State, you know, this is something I think a bit more tangible. Obviously, we can't speculate. We're not medical professionals, and we can't speculate as to, you know, what the nature of the injury was and what was ultimately the real risk of him injuring his Achilles. But something that I think is totally tangible and I think that we need to take Golden State to task on is how they messaged his injury, how they've kind of floated out, you know, game after game that he's day to day. Oh, he'll probably be back next game. Oh, after he doesn't play in game three, he's pushing to practice in game four. And, you know, the Steve Kerr press conferences almost got repetitive. And everyone, you know, rightfully so, was just in anticipation, just thinking, why isn't he playing? Like, what's going on? Is there a complication? And just the mixed signals that came out of the team not only created this sense of, this ridiculous narrative that is Kevin Durant like choosing not to play even though he can, but it also obviously, as you alluded to earlier, created this confusion amongst the players in Golden State that they were just all confused and frustrated, expecting Kevin Durant to play and him not. And so obviously, when your own teammates are expressing frustration, that just adds to the pressure that Kevin Durant must have been feeling to come back in game five.
As you're saying this, it's making me think of it. They hung him out to dry. Kevin Durant out to dry because they created a lose-lose situation for him.
Yeah.
Either he was actually injured or at serious risk for a more serious injury, which is exactly what ended up playing out, or he was, he was either going to not be able to play and there was going to be concern or speculation around maybe he hadn't done that right, or he was going to force himself back and risk this injury. So they didn't have to do that. they could have said before game one, there's no way he plays before Oracle or even beyond. And that would have given them a couple days to reassess. And then they could have come out and said like, no, he's not going to be playing here in Oracle. We'll see what happens. But they never would do that. And it was because they were playing, I presume, playing gamesmanship, right? Like, we just want to keep Toronto off balance or whatever.
Yeah.
But that just ends up, like you said, feeding into the pressure on Kevin Durant. So I think they hung him out to dry. They created a lose-lose situation, and he had to have just looked around. And when he got that medical clearance, it was like, well, I have to play. I have no other choice now.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. And I think you were saying about taking them to task here and pushing back and doing an investigation. We've alluded to it before. I do union work on a shop floor at a warehouse. If this kind of thing happened I mean, totally different context, of course, but yeah. if you had this kind of situation where there was a concern that got maybe overrided and then something bad happened, I mean, you would immediately do like you would file for an information request. You would do an investigation. Your union reps would go to work on this. And I actually feel very confident that the NBA Players Association will do exactly that, that this will be investigated properly. But it's sad. It's a sad thing to see all these like basketball journalists and commentators that we genuinely look up to. You know, both you and I are doing a podcast for a reason. We feel like this is a useful thing or an entertaining thing, and we're interested in doing it, and we look up to these guys, and they've just totally dropped the ball, I think. There's a major story in front of us right now, and I mean, at minimum, it has to be investigated thoroughly before we, like, draw conclusions, and obviously you and I are trying to balance out the lack of criticism with kind of erring on the side of criticizing. And I think that's the appropriate response given the context that we're dealing with. But at minimum, everybody should be digging in here and trying to get answers. And I do appreciate that those answers aren't going to be forthcoming until this series is over, until the basketball is done, and until we get a little distance from it. But yeah, I we already covered it, but I can't help but just putting a little bit of stress or emphasis on the fact that everybody just seems to have, for a minute, let's just assume that Bob Myers totally meant it and was actually breaking down and having a real human moment of empathy and regret at that podium. I don't care. I mean, you still, it doesn't matter how bad someone feels. Yep. You still got to do due diligence. So, So I think we're just in this weird place now. And I think both you and I talked about Jalen's take in particular, Jalen Rose's take in particular, and just not wanting this podcast to lose sight of what's really important here. And Jalen, to me, said it perfectly and gave kind of expression to everything I was feeling and exactly why I did not want Toronto. I mean, I guess that's maybe a little bit of my own dishonesty. If Toronto had wrapped it up there and won the title, I still would have been celebrating, of course. But in the moment when that injury happened and when there was the confusion and stress about how the Toronto fans reacted, and you could see all the Toronto players were embarrassed and were distracted by that, and everything just kind of broke down and there was a moment of chaos there, and I just came away feeling like, this just doesn't feel like the night to win the title. Like, this isn't right. Everything's off. Everything's askew. Yeah. And I don't know what's going to happen with the rest of the series. And obviously it's got nothing to do with the Toronto players or Nick Nurse and everything that this team has put into it, to win the title. And I, of course, will be cheering for the Raptors in game six. And if there goes to a game seven, and the mass of Toronto fans deserve a title and it'll be well earned and all that stuff. But in the moment I was like, nah, this is bogus. And this is a disaster and a tragedy. And that's more important than basketball.
Yeah. So before we get to, you know, the Toronto side of things and the fan reaction, I want to just, you know, put a bow on this. You know, you mentioned the NBA Players Association. I do hope they investigate this. And I think it's important to highlight that the people who are calling for accountability are former players, mm-hmm. you know, like Jalen Rose, Kendrick
Perkins.
It's
very telling.
Kendrick Perkins sent out a tweet saying he should have never been playing. Same with Charles Barkley. And, you know, you've been seeing an outpouring from current players and former players. And I think, like you said, it's very telling. And it speaks to, I think, a general idea that, you know, workers need to look out for workers, and they understand each other's situation best. And, you know, having a unification amongst them is extremely important to protect one another. And I hope that, you know, this is one thing I want to bring up. You know, it's important to tie this situation. It's not exactly the same, but I think there are parallels. The Kawhi Leonard situation, his injury last year. So Kawhi Leonard went from I would say almost universally adored MVP candidate level player to, you know, maybe not on the level of Kevin Durant, but he was vilified last year when he sat out. You know, not everyone, but a large majority of the media took the side of the San Antonio Spurs organization as they, you know, there was this butting of heads where San Antonio was saying, you know, we've cleared him to play. It's up to him now, and kind of throwing him under the bus. And just seeing the basically most of the media especially after this Kevin Durant injury, just leaves a horrible taste in my mouth. Just I'm disgusted by the kind of reactions and takes I heard about how Kawhi Leonard doesn't care about winning, about how he gave up on his team for no reason. And just and that continued into this year, where people were talking about when Toronto traded for him, people would say, oh, you traded for a quitter. You traded for a guy who doesn't care about his team. He'll never put all his all for you, for your team. He doesn't care. He only cares about himself and being in LA. And just that vilification of Kawhi. And now you look back, he made the right call. He 100%, you know, he is 100%, I think, validated after this. And I think I want to hold, I'm not going to name names, but there are certain people in the media that normally I respect, but just did a complete 180 on Kawhi after that situation, completely not seeing his perspective and taking the side of San Antonio. And they should be held to task for that as well. And kudos to Kawhi for not, falling victim to potentially another disastrous injury situation as well.
And I'll just add to that it's rich. The two examples, the experience with KD that we've just had, but then also thinking back and considering giving kind of with hindsight, thinking about what Kawhi went through and how strong he must have been to kind of just like not fall to that, not give in to the pressure. It really does. Those two examples considered alongside each other really highlight how phony and fickle the media is. And just like Jalen said, like how all this reaction and outpouring of concern for KD is so phony and ridiculous, because these are the same people who created the narratives that put him in this position. And they're the same people who went for the jugular with Kawhi and tried to ruin his reputation without knowing the facts, which is why I hesitate to kind of be too hard on Bob Myers. I don't know the facts there. I don't know the relationship, but this stuff that the media has done, it's pretty inexcusable. Yep. And I do think that Kawhi's example is an example for players to follow. We talked about the union and players coming together and having each other's backs. Not every player in San Antonio had Kawhi's back. In fact, a number of high profile players took the organization side and criticized him. I think Kawhi's example is the one to follow here, and I totally respect Kevin Durant's decision to come back and play, and I feel like at the end of the day, the blame is got nothing to do with him. He never should have gotten to that point where he had the option to come back, because obviously players want to come back and play and do what they love and compete for a championship. So I'm not saying don't use Kevin Durant as an example as a person and as a player in this league, but I just think Kawhi's resilience in that situation to just kind of block all that stuff out, hang tight, get to a team and a situation where he felt respected and listened to, and where his injury was going to be front and center, and how they kind of managed him and how much he was going to play. Maybe the last thing I want to say on this, and feel free to kind of sum it up again for us, because you did it well, but Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo had a conversation about load management, and they framed it as the myth of player rest, because they said, you know, on the one hand, you got Kawhi Leonard, who had the load manage experience this year, and he's kind of dealing with a knee injury anyway. And then on the other hand, you have Kevin Durant, who was not load managed and he's hurt. So it's like, clearly, their conclusion from that was that, like, we just don't know enough, and there really isn't any science to this. But I remember listening to that at the time and thinking they're making a bunch of like logical errors in their thinking, because Durant got hurt because of just how much he had to play, and Kawhi also sustained an injury after that, coming out of that Philly series where it was every other night. You know, it was that he was playing 40 plus minutes a game. It's like he got used up too much, and I don't know how the league should handle this or the players union, but I wonder if there might actually should be like a contractual like minutes limit on the year or per game or in back-to-back situations. I think I have not thought about it a lot, but it those guys kind of dismiss that discussion as like, well, we just don't know, and everybody's different, and whereas I came away from those two examples, those two contrasting examples, is like, clearly these players need to be protected a lot more. These star players are getting overused, and Toronto's been guilty of it in the playoff run too, because they just aren't built that way. But I think the league could step in, or the Players Association could step in and kind of level the playing field a bit and be like, nah, you can't play more than X number of minutes per week, or whatever the threshold could be, to kind of protect these guys a little more.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the main takeaway here is that don't listen to the likes of Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo and pretty much anyone in the media, especially when it comes to what's best for the players. I think our main message here is stand by the players. They know best. The players and, you know, their medical staffs, they will make ultimately, you know, as long as the players are being considered and their well-being is being put first, you should take that into consideration over anything that the media is claiming. It's just so rich to have Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo sit there and play conjecture of, oh, how much rest is good enough? Like, they know fuck all about this stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep,
so
yep.
It's this.
Well, Russillo in particular drives me nuts. And I know he's very talented. He does know about basketball and stuff. He's got some good takes, blah, blah, blah. But he basically said that there was a story. I think it was Kevin Arnovitz came out with a story like, Kawhi's really into this kind of science of 2,000 minutes a season. Like, you can't go over that. You're putting your body at risk if you do. And it sounds like all Ryan Russillo did in response to that story was like call up a couple of teams, not players, just teams, management, you know, people who are obviously in conflict with that finding. And they were just like, yeah, I don't know. The science is not like, it's not 100%. It's not solid. So, you know, we don't trust it, or we question it. And that was enough for him to just dismiss Kawhi and his team and their approach to it. So I think that instinct to follow the media narrative or the ownership or management take over the players is you find it, unfortunately, it really rears its head every time there's like a labor dispute or a contract dispute, and the players and the league are having a lockout or a strike around the collective bargaining agreement. Unfortunately, you see a lot of fans kind of be reactionary and take the side of management and ownership and be like, come on, you're making enough money. You have the greatest life ever. Like, we'd all trade places with you. And they just kind of instinctually
also
have a knee jerk support for management and ownership. And I think that's exactly, all got to change.
Exactly.
It's all got to change.
And I find that so rich whenever it comes to these contract negotiations, claiming that the players make, you know, quote unquote, so much money. Like, this is a contract negotiation between players and ownership. Who do you think is making most of the money in this negotiation?
Yeah.
Right. So,
yep. The 30 owners or the entire players?
Exactly. 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 So, I mean, it's just hilarious to me to see people, you know, turn on the players. And by virtue of turning on the players, you are implicitly taking the side of ownership. And so, I want to encourage, you know, our listeners to, you know, the players are what we care about. As basketball fans, I love watching the players. They are what this game is about. And watching a talent like Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, they're who I want to see. And I don't want to see them injure themselves, get hurt. And we want to give them, you know, all the power we can to make the right decisions that are best for themselves so they can continue to perform at a high level.
Yeah, amen.
So I think that's a good point to stop on this topic. I do want to get to the Toronto Raptors fans and sort of the backlash that we've seen there. So I want to briefly talk about that. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and discuss that.
Perfect, perfect.
Okay, so I think now we want to talk about the situation regarding the immediate aftermath of that injury that took place during that game. You know, David and I being, you know, firm, passionate Raptors fans, we do want to obviously discuss some of the backlash that we were seeing, the deserved backlash, I should say, regarding the immediate reaction of the fans after that injury. So for those who don't know, you know, once the moments after KD went down, You know, from what I've heard from people who were actually at the game, you know, there was confusion, but also definitely there were some jubilation and cheers were being heard throughout the arena and even in Jurassic Park. And, you know, you could, it was really a bad look from the fans' part, you know, cheering on an injury like that. But we did see that, you know, very quickly after that, you know, I think it started to click in a lot of people's heads about how, you know, devastating the situation is for KD. And, you know, you saw, you know, Raptors players take leadership there. You saw Kyle Lowry and Serge sort of ushering the crowd to stop cheering and to, you know, make them understand the gravity of the situation here. So, yeah, I mean, since that, there's been a lot of backlash from the media, from on Twitter, from, you know, other fan bases saying how, you know, kind of classless that initial reaction was by the Raptors fans, you know, cheering that horrible injury. So I come at this from two sides. I want to first, you know, hear from you, David. You know, you were with some American fans, not necessarily Toronto Raptors fans. You know, what was it like from your situation?
Yeah, it was, well, first of all, I agree completely. What a bad look. What a terrible turn of events. You already have this awful injury and then you get insult to injury with some dumbass fans just reacting the way they did. I think in some ways it's even more damning that there's footage of Jurassic Park doing the same thing, because the game was happening as the injury was happening, and I think in the arena there must have been a lot of confusion, and we did eventually see the crowd kind of chanting KD in support. And so I think the in-crowd or in-stadium reaction is not defensible or excusable, but a little more, there's a little more nuance there. But to see the Jurassic Park fans also, who have the broadcast in front of them, who know what's going on, to see them also kind of cheering this on was really, really unfortunate and ugly. And like I alluded to earlier, kind of a perfect rebuttal, unfortunately, to our kind of sports competition is good and healthy and awesome and it's been really good for Toronto. Unfortunately, we saw a really strong counterexample of how sports can lead you to some dark places and some bad places and be a source of antagonism and hostility and divisiveness instead of always a source of unity. So yeah, I was sitting there watching with my family down here in the States, and everyone's kind of followed my lead and kind of gotten on board and tried to get behind the Raptors and be good sports fans with me watching this, because they appreciate that I'm you know, not able to be in Toronto, and so they're kind of rallying and being supportive. And when that happened, when that moment happened and you saw these Raptors fans disgrace themselves, it was tough. It was tough for me in that room. It was like my mother-in-law in particular kind of was just like, wait, is this something that happens in basketball? Like, is this something that happens in Canada? Do people not respect and like show their appreciation for an injured athlete? Like, right. There was a real, and then I unfortunately ran into the same thing at work today, where people were like, wow, that was cold blooded. Like, what's wrong with the Raptors fans? Right. Why did they cheer that? So unfortunately that is a big part of the story. I said earlier, I don't want to overstate it, because I do think a lot of fan bases, especially just the way it played out, a lot of fan bases would probably do the same bad thing, to be clear. But yeah, it was heartbreaking. It was really unfortunate, and it deepened my sense that we had no business winning that game. You know, it was bad enough to see KD go down, to fuck up the reaction like that and to be shitty fans, even if it was brief. It was just like, yeah, no, this isn't our night.
Yeah, I think it's important to call it for what it was. It was shitty. It was horrible. It was terrible. You know, that reaction, you know, I don't want to make excuses. I think it was terrible. But you can, I guess, I think for other fan bases to claim that, like, you know, they would have never done that is kind of easy to say. You know, definitely, I think, you know, it's easy to understand that from, you know, very excited Raptors fans, you know, that injury, you could very, like, the immediate thought, I'm sure across a lot of people's minds, it was, oh my gosh, this is our window to win the championship. And right. So you can, I guess, understand to an extent why there was cheering and some jubilation there, as disgusting as it was. And I think that kind of ties to, you know, this idea that as fans, as sports fans, it's important that we are aware of how we consume and appreciate sports, and that ultimately, you know, it's important to be conscientious that often we can dehumanize really what's happening here. These are people playing this game. And yeah. I think it's very easy, and it ties back to what we were talking about last episode. You know, sports does build community amongst fans, amongst followers. It can bring people together. But at the same time, you know, it can rear its ugly head, you know, that competitive aspect, you know, despite the fact that it seems harmless, you know, channeling our competitive drive into watching sports, it can also, you know, cause harm to the players that are competing. And so I think, you know, my message is that, you know, it's important as fans to be aware of the human aspect of the sport and how we appreciate it. And, you know, I also heard, you know, some people claim that, you know, oh, these are, you know, Toronto fans, Canadian fans, like they should hold themselves to a higher standard, or we should hold ourselves to a higher standard, right, as if yeah. Toronto fans are unique from, you know, American fans. I think there's this weird, you know, narrative that, I mean, it's not weird. It's funny, you know, the stereotype that Canadians are nice. You know, Jimmy Kimmel did that bit where he, you know, picked and chose the oldest and whitest people in Toronto and asked them to trash talk Golden State right. fans to illustrate that Canadians are nice. And it was hilarious, but it was also ridiculous. I think it's important right. for any of our American listeners to know that Canadians, we have, you know, just as many bad apples, I think.
And also awesome, cool people who can trash talk. Like yeah, that was oh, embarrassing yeah, exactly. as well. That video yeah. was like, I mean, come on, we can do some trash talk. Oh, I mean, yeah. anyone who's listening to William Liu and his guests when they do like, what do they call
the
it?
Slander pods.
The slander pod. Yeah. I mean, hell yeah, we can hold their 100%. Own. 100%. So it was totally ridiculous.
Exactly. And so, I mean, ultimately, it was definitely a terrible reaction, but I think, and I also, you know, want to bring this up that, you know, Canadians don't consume football as much as American fans do. And this is just conjecture on my part, but it may be, I know, you know, your parents-in-law, they are into football where injury yeah. is much more common. And so they understand and they're prepared for, you know, the situation that a player may get injured and, you know, how to appropriately respond
sure,
to that.
Sure.
As you know, basketball fans, if you don't watch football, these kind of injuries are much less common, especially, yeah. you know, one as horrible as a ruptured Achilles.
Well, and I also wanted to say too, that like, and you know, it's not an excuse, but I think that it kind of divides the like sports fans or like the basketball fans from like just partisans who are kind of caught up in this championship run, because any basketball fan knows right away, as soon as Kevin Durant comes up with a non-contact injury, that it's, and especially with his recent injury history with the calf and this is stature and his place in the game, in the history of the game, everyone immediately in that category will recognize how devastating this injury is. And even as a Raptors fan who also has some of that insight, it felt like an opportunity was taken away from us as yeah. well as Raptors fans, because it's like maybe the fans in the building didn't feel this way, maybe they were panicked, but I thought we actually did really well in that first quarter to be hanging in there, and it was a tight game, and Golden State had shot like something like 70% from the 3-point line, so the fact that we were right there, it was like, oh, we actually have this golden opportunity to kind of get full value for this championship win and this upset if Kevin Durant stays healthy and is part of this yeah. series moving forward. And so I actually felt like that was part of my reaction too, was like, in addition to being devastated by what I assumed was an Achilles injury right away, I was also just bummed that like we're going to win it in the worst possible way, exactly, kind of. And yeah. I don't want to dive into that, because I think we're getting on in this conversation, but that was part of my reaction as well. And I think more fans who are just kind of like, well, they're just aware that the Raptors are happening right now and it's this big story, and maybe they don't fully appreciate the game or these players. That reaction, that kind of just like partisan reaction where they just like are cheering another team losing a star player. That I think that's where you get that from. And I that and yeah. it goes back to kind of your call to like fans or listeners to like embrace these players and support these players, because I think the most appropriate way to be a basketball fan in particular, an NBA fan in particular, is to cherish all these star players, because you get to see so much of them, right? The, just the way the game's structured, the rosters are a lot smaller, the way they manage the clock and how these guys play, they're pretty much on the court the whole game, these star players. And to me, that's just special, because mm-hmm. in hockey and football, even soccer, you don't get to see so much of the best players. You have to kind of pace yourself as a viewer to kind of look for those few moments where you really get to see someone do something special. Basketball is really different. You get to really constantly be watching the very best at their game and at their sport. And so, yeah, I would wrap that in. I would tie that in a little bit to the call to support players. I would also put that as a challenge to like people who are just strictly partisan basketball fans. Like, get like, appreciate your team by all means. Obviously, you and I started a podcast named Raptors Room. We're both diehard Raptors fans, but both of us come at the game as like, there's a bunch of really great athletes, a bunch of really special players, a bunch of like kind of culture or like trend setting players to really get behind and enjoy and appreciate. And KD's at the top of that list. So yeah, it was really disappointing. It was a huge bummer
to see
us mishandle that. But
yeah, well said. And I think I want to stress this earlier point that you brought up about how there's like a bunch of, you know, new fans potentially. And like, I know firsthand, there are a lot of people at my workplace who like are telling me that these finals are the first time they've ever watched a full basketball game. And they're all in on the Raptors now, and they're all excited, and understandably so. Like, I'm not disparaging them for that.
Sure,
I think it's great.
Yeah.
And I think it's great that, you know, we're building this increasingly large fan base in Toronto. Again, this idea of building community. But for us, you know, longtime fans, I think we have, you know, not necessarily a responsibility, but I think it would be advisable to, you know, make them understand and appreciate, you know, what they're watching. And it's back to your yep. point that we should recognize that it's the players are what we care about, and they're what brings us joy, basketball, you know, potentially more than any other sport. And so, you know, when
that's my favorite thing about basketball is that you can point pretty much to every decade and point to the star players, and regardless of whether you're on your team or not, it's a spectacle to watch them. And you just don't get the same from hockey or football in particular. And so, yeah, I get, like you said, maybe it's not your responsibility, but it's something to take under advisement. If you're going to shell out the money and come out to these games, like, come on. Like,
yeah, exactly.
don't be an asshole, and don't get confused about why you're there and what's really going on.
Yeah.
Because it is about the players. I think we're at this point, we're repeating ourselves here a little bit, but I can't separate those two things. Like, I think, you know, we talk about good competition, bad competition. I think there's good fans and bad fans. And unfortunately, Toronto had a moment in this playoff series where the bad fans took center stage, and it's regrettable.
Yeah, agreed. And yeah, I think basically to wrap it up, like, that was a horrible situation. I think we need to hold our fans accountable for that. You know, it was inexcusable, but I think, you know, moving forward, this is a learning opportunity for us as well.
Yeah.
You know, this is the first time Toronto has been on the big stage, really.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a learning experience for us. And yeah, so I think moving forward, you know, to wrap up this pod, you know, looking forward to game six. I think I still have 100% confidence in our team. I think, you know, most teams would have been shook by that incident. And maybe
we were.
They would have been shook for the whole series, maybe.
Yeah.
But I think we were potentially shook during that game. But I think our team has the maturity and resolve to not run into a Houston Rockets situation where the moment becomes too big for us, as you pointed out and I've come around to. And I am hopeful. And I think ultimately now, you know, if we are mentally focused and locked in, this is our series. And so that's what I'm hoping for. So let's hope for my prediction to come true that I said at the start of the series, Raps in six.
Yeah, I like that prediction. It's looking better and better. I also got to admit that I kind of need it to come true because I don't know if I can handle the emotional distress of a whole weekend anticipating a game seven on Sunday night. So I really hope it is Raps in six. I do think I agree. You know, take a step back. The Raps have clearly been the better team in this series on a consistent basis. Kevin Durant was always kind of the X factor to that statement, the thing that could come along and mess that up. And I'm not fully ready to say that he did that in his 12 minutes, but he did look good. And it's as much as it rattled the team when he came down with that injury. And I think more than anything, you know, and talk about being a learning experience. I mean, more than anything, I think that what rattled our team was the way the fans mishandled it and upset our own players and took them out of the moment. But at the calm center, the calm in the eye of the storm, so to speak, is Kawhi Leonard. And yeah. I have full confidence that they're going to settle down just like they did eventually in that game five that they did eventually lose. They did calm down and they did play some of their best basketball in the fourth quarter there. I think they'll do the same. And I predicted the Raps in seven, but I've really come around to Raps in six. I think we'll just go out there businesslike and take care of business, regardless of all the narratives and all the frustration maybe that after game five and all the chaos. I do think the Raptors will be fine and they'll settle in, and all they need to do is not shoot absolutely terribly from the 3-point line, and they'll win. I mean, really, every loss that we've had has been built on just kind of inefficiency. As long as we're like middle of the road efficient, our defense and Kawhi Leonard will see us through. So I have a lot of mixed feelings right now. I think we had planned originally to record yesterday, and I kind of demurred at that. Like I also was busy, but I just also didn't want to sit down and talk basketball yet because I was so devastated from the way Game 5 shook out. I still felt that way, and that's why we kind of needed to focus on Kevin Durant, and that's ultimately the biggest story right now in basketball. But I do think the Raptors are going to come through, and they're going to get over time, they will get the credit they deserve for an incredible playoff run. And on the other side of it, you know, if we have an opportunity to defend the title next year, there'll be obviously lots of motivation to still prove ourselves as truly the best team in basketball. So I'm looking forward to game six. I'm looking forward to game seven. Something that got lost in the shuffle a bit was just how competitive game five was. And this has been ultimately a very competitive series where basketball has been played at really the highest level with good coaching and some star turns and role players stepping up. And it's been a confusing and at times frustrating and even tragic finals. But it's also just been a really good competitive finals. And I think the Raps are going to pull it out.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed 100% with all that. Raps fans, stay hopeful. I'm still hopeful. Keep our heads up. You know, we're still in the driver's seat here. So,
yep.
Still there. Go Raps, still Raps in six. And then hopefully next time we talk, we'll be celebrating.
Hell yeah. You have to enjoy the celebration in Toronto for me. That's been another bittersweet aspect of this for me personally is watching all of the incredible celebrations going on in Toronto. And I'm down here in Jacksonville holding it down as best I can, but I'll be missing out a little bit, but that's okay. There's this modern age we live in. There'll be lots of video footage, and I'm holding you to the promise that you're going to give me a call when you're out in the streets celebrating.
Yeah, I'll do some live coverage of this aftermath and also the ultimate parade that we're going to have
for you
and for our listeners.
Well, maybe I can come for the parade. I don't know how quick it'll happen, but maybe I can come for the parade.
That would be awesome. Yeah.
We'll see. All right, man.
Talk to you later. Go Raps.
Hell yeah.